Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 26th of October, recording at 9:10 p.m. And this is the last day for a while that I'll be able to say it's still British summertime. Clocks go back on Sunday. Now, first the highlights on this fascinating week. I found it absolutely riveting, and I imagine many of you have as well. First, global stock markets. After the selling squall that we saw last week and the week before for some markets, that little reaction, we've seen some real strength coming in and picking up as the week has developed. And I can tell you that today, Friday, has been absolutely stunning here for some of these markets in terms of gains. Big percentage gains occurring in a number of the Asian markets, and this has taken India on its Sensex index to another new all-time high. It has taken Hong Kong to a new all-time high, breaking above that 30,000 level. Most of the other Asian markets remain very firm within an eyelash of their all-time highs. We've just seen a little underperformance by China, which is entitled to a breather. European markets, having seen the setback last week, have seen at least a partial recovery in here this week. Wall Street had a very good day here today, up nearly a percentage point, 135 points on the Dow, nearly 21 on the NASDAQ, that would be up 1.3% on the NASDAQ, on the S&P rather, that was, up 21 points, nearly 1.38% for the S&P, and the NASDAQ up not a little shy of 2%, which is extremely good. And the NASDAQ continuing to lead within a whisker of its highs. Okay, in terms of long-dated government bonds, well, nothing to say there. Really very, very quiet following their rally that we saw last week and the week before, and possibly the week before that. Now, in currencies, this was important. The dollar shrugged off a sort of spasm key day reversal that we had seen. And had absolutely, that key day reversal had no follow through, and the dollar just has weakened again, going to new lows on its US dollar index, new lows against the euro and a number of other currencies around the world. So that theme of dollar devaluation continues. So my voice is still a little bit scratchy after that long seminar that I had yesterday, speaking for 2.5 hours nonstop, plus lots of chit chat before and after. Now, the precious metals have had a really exciting week in here after some setbacks and choppy volatility last week. We've seen new highs by gold and platinum in here today, and we've seen silver break above that psychological $14 level. All these are important developments. And oil has been pretty firm overall, closing out the day just below 92. We're still getting a little after hours trading here. And soft industrial metals, firmer. No big gains, but quietly firmer overall. Most soft commodities are firmer. Again, this reflects the dollar's weakness. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, I have talked from time to time that the investor's choice is really, I've described it as being between the wobbly West and the enterprising East. And we see why We have this wobbly West situation. They have the lower GDP growth. The banking crisis has been largely confined to the West. And we've seen with Merrill Lynch's shocking $8 billion write-down announced yesterday, just how devastating this can be in terms of profitability for some of these financial institutions. And we know that there's more of that stuff out there that will surface and be written off over time. So this is going to drag on for a long time. Is the credit crisis over? Well, not quite, but I had said a while back that it had passed its nadir. But for the financial institutions, the bad news rolls on, and it'll probably roll on well into and possibly right through next year. Of course, markets being what they are discounting this possibility very very rapidly, creating some nice valuations in the financial sector. But as I've also said before, when I'll talk about those valuations, you get some mouth-watering yields in the 5% and higher category, and very low single figure PERs, but those PERs are going to go up because the earnings are going to slump in a pretty big way for most of those Western banks. And we have to bring in the Japanese banks. As far as I'm concerned, or as far as I've observed, rather, they haven't declared anything regarding subprime losses, but it strikes me as inconceivable that they aren't up to their eyeballs in this stuff. I'm gauging that on the basis of the long underperformance of those Japanese banking shares. And then we know that the Japanese investors have been yield starved for a very long time. So those are the areas, those are the regions, and that are underperforming. And I've often advocated that what's bad for the banks is generally bad for the market in general, and that's what the West faces, and that's also what Japan faces. So I would expect these regions to continue to underperform overall. That won't mean that there won't be a number of bright spots. And you might look at a chart of Wall Street and say, well, actually, this is doing pretty well. You've got the dollar up at a new all-time, I beg your pardon, you've got the Dow not that far off its all-time highs. Well, that's in US dollars. And in that PowerPoint presentation that I posted yesterday for the talk that I had given to the Nordic Association of Electricity Traders, I showed the Dow in dollars, and then I showed, since most of them were delegates were Norwegians, I showed the Dow in Norwegian crowns. You can see that chart anytime in the library, and of course it's in that PowerPoint that I posted yesterday. And the Dow in adjusted in a readjusted for a strong in a strong currency is way below its all-time high. So these currency adjustments are important and need to be taken on board by investors. Now, the areas that will do best in the West and in Japan are the quality big cap multinational exporting firms. So the US has plenty of those. And the technology story, I think, is really exciting. We're getting a momentum play coming into technology. Well, we have a momentum play with technology, and I think this can run quite a long way. Everybody hated the sector for 7 years, nearly 8 years, following the burst bubble, understandably. A lot of those companies went bust. The good ones survived, went into a very, very lengthy base building process, and then began to perform. And they have been performing increasingly. The latest incredibly dramatic example here today was Microsoft, which had been lagging on the tech recovery, but had a very large base formation on the charts, just ranging sideways, and then some higher lows, higher reaction lows in the last few months within that base formation, and just blasted up out of that pattern in here today on the back of earnings that were well above what people had been estimating. So this is a very good theme. And Owen's done a lot of work on technology and sort of scanning around the globe to picking up and reporting on technology companies. My own feeling is that the best plays, or many of the best plays at any rate, are in the USA, partly because the US real strong point in the global economy is the information field. It'll continue to be the leader in information technology for quite a long time. And the weak dollar is manna from heaven for these companies. Whereas there will be some very good technology companies elsewhere around the world, not least in Asia. Incidentally, the telecoms are performing right in that group as well. But many good companies coming up in Asia, but they will experience some cost pressures there as their currencies are appreciating against the US dollar overall. So really, in looking at technology, one wants to be quite selective, because if you back the right horse, it will do exceedingly well, I think, over at least the next 6 months, and judging from the chart patterns, probably a good deal longer. And again, everyone needs to do their own due diligence on this, and chart patterns are very, very good for pointing out those relative strength leaders. So we can go through and pick those up very, very quickly. And the laggards, a lot of the laggards in the sector, particularly some of the smaller companies, might just not make it. And therefore, if you back the right horse in technology, where the speed with which a company's outlook can improve is matched only by the speed with which they can become obsolescent. So if we back the right companies, of course, one does exceptionally well. We back the wrong ones, and you can lose everything in those companies. Top dog, as far as I'm concerned, and certainly also in the eyes of a lot of other investors, would be Google. Although you get a little bit of vertigo and looking at that, and it's on a very fancy valuation, but it is rolling on. And once, I think investors in technology stocks need to use trailing stops that aren't too tight. But I've got a lot to cover, so I don't want to dwell too much on that sector. But for the West, the wobbly West, really, it needs to be the big cap, multinational, exporting companies. And best of all will be those companies that service the global infrastructure boom, the demand, well, that are involved with the surge in demand for all resources, particularly industrial resources, but also foods. And that's a hugely important theme. Water remains a hugely important theme because of scarcity problems in terms of clean drinkable water. So that's what looks good in the West. Domestic sectors, I don't like them, particularly in the USA. If US economy was measured only on the basis of the domestic sectors, it would be in deep recession right now. And where do we go for the best bang for our buck, pound, yen, euro, Aussie, Kiwi dollar, whatever, renminbi? And That I think is Asia. I've said so many times that India and China are the queen and king of emerging markets, and I like emerging markets generally. And the only well, these need to be measured on the basis not only of what those basic industries are they primarily manufacturers, are they commodity exporters, are they do they have but governance is a crucial factor overall. And when there are concerns about governance, such as we saw for ta with Thailand for the last 2 years, and that position still hasn't been resolved, but a lot of us think that we're close to an acceptable resolution. But when there are big question marks over governance, investing is a global beauty contest, and performance is certainly done on occurs on the basis of a global beauty contest, and investors vote with their feet. They don't need to be in a market where there are major concerns over governance. But now I've posting on the website tonight, among many interesting items, a fascinating slide. It's a presentation produced by Evie Hambro. He's manager of the MLW fund and some other funds. He's also involved with that Merrill Lynch Golden General, as well as the World Mining Trust. And it's interesting, but I'm only going to mention one section, which I've taken and added to one slide on that has some data that will be just of interest to all investors, I'm sure. And here are a few statistics. I know statistics are boring, but I'm only going to give you a very small number of them. Emerging markets represent 86% of the world's population. 86% of the world's population. They represent 75% of the world's land mass. They represent 70% of the world's foreign reserves. That's important, 70% of the world's foreign reserves. They represent 52% of world GDP. 52% of world GDP. Now get this. Yet they represent only 9% of world equity market capitalization. 9%. Yet 52% of world GDP. Now, that's staggeringly low. Equity capitalization of only 9% might conceivably make sense if these emerging markets were rapidly declining in GDP relative to the developed world. But the opposite is true. Their growth is surging, led by China and India. So, really, I can only conclude from this that emerging market equity capitalization will soar relative to developing countries over the next several decades and eventually reach 70 to 80%. Now, this is not a new realization, as you'll appreciate. This has been a key Fuller Money theme for really since 2003, early 2003. And I know a lot of you, certainly the veteran subscribers, have investment portfolios weighted in that direction, and that's where I most want to be. Now, I think the charge, to say, will continue to be led by India and China, the queen and king of emerging markets, respectively. And my strategy on these all along is to first buy and hold, and then but to buy and add positions on setbacks. And I did it again very recently with my Indian investment, as you may recall, taking advantage of that sell-off when the change in regulations, which primarily affected hedge funds, came into play. Okay, Okay, the resources theme, which ties in so nicely with the emerging market theme. First, a number of the leading producers of resources are emerging markets, with Brazil heading that list. But of course, then we get stunning market performers, Australia and Canada, with major resources companies there. These are terrific themes, and my portfolio reflects that weighting as well, and my investment portfolio. And then my investment portfolio has been more speculatively banking on a major move in gold. And this certainly appears to be underway. Spot bullion closed just a short while ago at 785.40. 785.40, that was up over $16 in here today, with the other precious metals performing accordingly. Silver, a little bit of after-hours trading, but on my screen is currently showing up 40 cents at 14.31 for the December contract. So just terrific, terrific moves in here. So I'm positioned that way, and I do that through that Merrill Lynch Golden General Fund. And my next really big holding in the top 10 in that area is with Lihir, the gold share, which is the interestingly, I noticed is the top holding when I last checked on Bloomberg a week or two ago in the Merrill Lynch Golden General Fund. And I think that pretty much covers it on well, no, it doesn't. And indeed, in terms of equities, let's look further ahead. We're in a series, we're in a period of seasonal strength. And I'm posting a chart, a very useful chart from that chart of the day service here, which illustrates this. And I've known it, and veteran subscribers are well aware of this, and many of you new subscribers probably are as well, but that the market performance from November to April every year on average is vastly greater than the performance during the rest of the year. And the question is that going to continue here this year and into the first 3, 4 months of next year? Well, I think it is. Certainly, the technical action suggests that that will be the case. But I think that we will see the fuller money themes continuing to distance themselves from what I refer to as the wobbly Western indices. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that, because we still have this Achilles heel problem of the banks that I discussed earlier on, and have discussed really on a daily basis. And incidentally, those bank shares have got to bottom out and improve dramatically to start lowering the risk on the broader markets that are experiencing the very weak banking sectors. So, what could go wrong? Well, there will be periodic shocks, and shocks should be in inverted commas, because we shouldn't be shocked at all, because we know that there's more toxic waste that will emerge. Related to all the those dodgy loan securitizations, and that's going to be a problem, obviously for quite some time, and that will jar nerves from time to time and weigh particularly heavily on the broader markets in the countries affected. But again, all you need to do is look at the U.S. or the European bank indices or the Japanese bank indices, and then compare those with a Chinese bank index, and compare those with the Indian Bank Index or the Australian Bank Index, which hit a new high today, I believe. The Indian one certainly did, if the Australian one didn't. No, I think it was the Indian one that hit a new high, but the Australian banks have been performing quite respectably on average, as reflected by their index. So what could go wrong? Well, aside from more bad news bank disclosures, the dollar could be a factor here because the dollar is persistently weak. And if it accelerates from here, then that would be regarded as a developing crisis, as I've said so many times before, or it might well be regarded as a developing crisis. A weaker dollar is on the cards. There are just so many dollars floating around. Really think about it. China must have well over $1 trillion of reserves. What does the Middle East have? It's going to be absolutely huge in terms of dollar reserves. What does Japan have? Well, it's going to be enormous, not as big as China's, but it must be, and it's certainly in the hundreds of billions. So all these dollars that are floating around out there, and people are worried about them because they're losing purchasing power. Also, the Fed, I suspect, will continue to cut rates. I think it certainly needs to do so. And there's that old saying that a central bank should take them up like an escalator, in other words, gradually, and bring them down like an elevator, rapidly. So any rate cut, of course, lessens the appeal of the dollar. This will help the U.S. trade figures over time, as we know. But my concern is that if the dollar falls too rapidly, that will cause more volatility in markets generally, and I think we should be prepared for some more of that volatility. And then we have every possibility of a really strong run in precious metals, and if that is accompanied by a strong run in the price of crude oil, well, that would cause some unease in markets. So really, you should expect volatility, not that many linear trends in here. What about the next bear market? My earliest date for that is still what it's been for the last 2 years. I've said with any luck we'd get through to 2009, 2010 at the earliest, before we would have to worry about a bear market. That doesn't mean if you get a disastrous blunder in some sectors such as banking. I mean, their banking shares in the West and in Japan are seeing their own bear market, as you know. But I'm talking about the broader market indices, which are not. And there is just a possibility that if this global economic slowdown that we're seeing, which is mainly in the West, but that will cause a, I'm assuming that will cause just a very slight slowdown in some of those Asian economies. There is a good possibility that that could push that date of the bear market, the next bear market, further out. And I'm quite adamant on the subject that the lead signs that you'll get before we have the next bear market in global equities will be sharply rising long-dated government bond yields and a progression of higher interest rates by most of the world's central banks. Now, that's not a problem for now. We're still getting a few rate hikes where economies are very, very strong and inflationary pressures have pushed up. China's a candidate, Australia remains a candidate, but really, it's when the Fed goes back into interest rate hiking mode that you'll know that we're on a shortening fuse here as far as a deteriorating environment for equities that could be quite severe. But that's not on the immediate horizon. That's well out there, I believe, and I think we will see, as I have maintained, a good period in stock markets, albeit with some volatility, through the end of the year and well into the first quarter, and probably a bit beyond, until we get into that more seasonally risky period. And of course, when investors are no longer preoccupied with the possibilities for economic slowdown and are instead looking at rising inflationary pressures once again, and they'll have gold to remind them of that, and they'll have rising bond yields to remind them of that. Again, we will see that, particularly the bond yields. Gold is arguably has been such an undervalued play for a long time, that alone isn't going to cause so many big problems, unless it gets to become a front page news item, and that probably will happen at some stage. But I don't think we're going to see that overnight. Okay, what else to mention here? Secular bull market in all of these industrial resources. The commodities, agricultural commodities rather, foods, they're much more choppy overall, but the indices show big bases, and we have to expect more food price inflation in coming years for population reasons, and GDP growth reasons alone. The obvious point, create a large Chinese middle class, they're going to eat a lot more protein, and that's going to require more grains, corn, so on. So it's a familiar story for you. And in terms of other currencies, other than the dollar, I do expect the dollar to go lower, of course. The resources currencies are the strongest of all. On a long term, on a very long term investment basis, I like those Asian currencies the most because they're undervalued and they are underpinned by global GDP growth. So I think, and you've heard me say this before, I think that most of the analysts, most of the strategists, that they still continue to refer to risky markets, say China and India, and just okay, Warren Buffett saying be cautious on China. Well, that's just being prudent. He's not going to be telling people to pile into China like Jim Rogers at this stage, or even Rogers is saying he's worried about a developing bubble. Of course, there's a developing bubble in China. We've seen that for quite some time. On my program, I've said for the last couple of years or more that I felt that we would be pretty safe in China at least through to the August 2008 Olympics, and that'll do for now. But when you get a bubble that is underpinned by a very good growth story, that bubble tends to become bigger and expand for longer than the people who warn about it would expect. So I'm relatively relaxed there. But what at this stage, but what I wanted to say is that with these emerging market and resources themes, we get the earnings, we get the GDP growth, we get the stock market performance, we get the strong currency. It's really game, set, and match. So, an exciting week, and no doubt another one next week, I trust. Hopefully, as profitable as this one. It's been quite a good week for Fuller Money themes. And meanwhile, I'll say all the very best to all of you. Have a fabulous weekend.